Blog Talk Radio.
And here we go.
All right, welcome back to That Nerd Show. I know you've missed us. We haven't been on in a while, but we are back Thursday night, and we got a lot of fun and exciting things to talk about. And if you've read the title of the show, we are going to address all those Star Wars rumors and tell you what we think. So, but before we get to that, we do have some news, and I think Brendan already found his rant for the day about the PS4. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But anyway,
well,
first
more,
thing that we
more
do,
about Comcast being dicks.
Well, they are dicks. And we'll tell you why in a little bit.
But
before we get to anything else, there is one major thing that we do have to address. We are nerds. I'm sure everybody heard this past week the very sad news that Leonard Nimoy had passed away. Mr. Spock is gone. And we want to send
Leonard Nimoy's condolences.
Gone.
Mr. Spock will always be with us.
Right. We want to send out our condolences from this show and from That Nerd Show as a news outlet to his family and all the fans throughout the world. He is the epitome of nerddom. And while there's a lot of people in the nerd universe that, you know, are great on TV and in movies, but you could care less about meeting in person, he's not one of those. He is definitely somebody in awe of and an incredibly nice man. So we had the privilege of enjoying one of his panels in Dallas a few years ago, and it was a very, very wonderful hour with him. So rest in peace, Mr. Nimoy. But you're absolutely right, Brendan. Spock will always live on, and the characters that he played. And, you know, Gene Roddenberry always said he was the consciousness of Star Trek, and nobody embodied that more than Leonard Nimoy, who was the only person to actually be in the original pilot that NBC rejected and then cross over. So, I'll be honest, it's kind of hard to believe that he's gone. I know he was my grandmother's age, and I know, you know, he was old, but, you know, it's just kind of a shocker to not have Spock, you know, in our lives as a nerd. So, anyway, moving right along. And by the way, a little quick thing. There was a challenge this weekend on Facebook for all you poets and writers out there. Vulcan haikus. So write your best haiku and Leonard Nimoy and Spock and Star Trek. So there were some pretty incredible ones on Facebook over the weekend. So anyway, so that happened. And as for other exciting news, of course, there's all sorts of interesting rumors going on about who's going to be playing Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe. Right now, the latest contender is Freddie Highmore, who plays Norman Bates in the Bates Motel series, which is really, really creepy.
I could actually get behind that.
Yeah,
I can't do it. But I think he would actually make a good – I think he's a very good actor. I mean, if you can pull off being that believable, being that creepy as a young kid, I think paying Peter Parker in Spider-Man would be a piece of cake.
Oh, yeah. Well, I made comments about it, about him being creepy in the Bates Motel, but that's what you're supposed to be. I mean, that's what makes that show great.
Right.
I mean, it –
And it's hard to pull off being creepy at that age without coming off as creepy.
Exactly. So,
I mean, it's hard for somebody that young to come off as truly sinister.
Right. Well, and, you know, as a young kid, because his, you know, I think his first movie was Finding Neverland with Johnny Depp about J.M. Barrie, who wrote Peter Pan. But the other one that he did was, you know, the remake of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is what the title was, but Willy Wonka. And he was probably one of the bright spots of that remake, which was okay, but not really that good. you know, you can't really beat the original. I don't care if you do have Johnny Depp in it. But no, he's done some pretty incredible things, and I agree with you. I could kind of get behind that. So we will see what happens with that. Also, gotta say this: part seriousness, part jokes. It actually happened today. So if everybody hasn't heard it, Harrison Ford crashed a plane today. And he's relatively okay. He's still in the hospital, but, you know, walked away from it and stuff. Was flying a old World War II plane, and he was having engine trouble, so he had no choice but to crash land on a golf course. And therefore, I get to make this joke. Apparently it is true if you've watched Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Yes, Indy can fly. Land, no.
Yeah. The only thing that doesn't surprise... The only thing that would surprise me more or wouldn't surprise me is if he just like got up, like, I'm fine. Well, I'm here. Somebody give me some clubs. You know,
right. Yeah, I agree.
Guessing the paramedics overruled that idea though.
So anyway, what were you, talking about, Comcast and why they're dicks?
All right. So, HBO has developed an HBO Go app for the PlayStation 4. Now, if you have just about any cable company in the country, you can use it, unless you're with Comcast. Comcast has blocked its internet subscribers from using the HBO Go app on the PS4 because they want you to subscribe to HBO through them. Now, look, I'm not now I know the FCC came out with these new, like, regulations, and I don't know everything about them because, once again, we have a secret plan. We have to pass it to find out what's in it. But here's my thing with cable companies in general. In South Korea, they have three times the average bandwidth. In the United States, the average bandwidth is about 35. It's good for 26th in the world. Now, that doesn't sound great, 35 meg per second being 26 in the world, but you have to take into account that a lot of the countries that are ahead of them, actually most of the countries that are ahead of them, are very small, and it's easy to get the infrastructure to everybody because they're densely populated. Everybody's right on top of each other. We are a very large company. We are have areas that are very sparsely populated, so the infrastructure is not as easy. However, the one thing all those countries, including countries like South Korea, have over us big time is the ability of choice. Most South Koreans have the choice of about a dozen different internet providers to choose from. What does competition do? It keeps prices down and it keeps customer service up. In the United States, they say that our cable companies don't have monopolies, except they kind of do. In the area that they have an exclusive monopoly. So I can only get Time Warner where I'm at. If I go a little farther north, I can only get Verizon, so and so. So you basically have a choice between the cable company or the phone company of how to get your internet, which means price goes north because they can charge whatever the hell they want, and service goes south. Time Warner and Comcast are two of the worst customer service companies in the world. And that's not just me saying that. Multiple consumer reports have all said that. They suck. So,
yeah.
If the federal government's going to get involved, do something good for once and regulate some choice. Let us have the ability to have a free market and go choose our own internet provider. That would be awesome. And that's what makes Comcast and Time Warner a bunch of dicks.
Yeah, you don't have to be the evil empire in this situation. So, just saying. All right, I'm going to... Hey, David, how's it going?
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
another exciting That Nerd Show.
Yeah.
So, before
I kind of came in the middle of that. Which one are you talking about? The government wanting to regulate the internet?
Well, we're complaining
about. No, I was talking more about Comcast basically being horrible at customer service and blocking HBO Go on PS4. So if you have your cable internet through Comcast, you can't use HBO Go on PS4. You have to subscribe to HBO through Comcast.
Oh, I thought that was just HBO trying to milk it for more money.
No,
No, that's Comcast trying to get the subscription for themselves, because HBO would get the money either way.
And this is why we have torrent sites where people can watch Game of Thrones for free.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving right along, before we get to anything comic book related, which I'm going to ask David here in a minute, interesting piece of news. John Barrowman is developing a TV miniseries. And let's face it, I don't really have to tell you the details of that TV miniseries. All I had to say was John Barrowman was doing it, and we're all going to watch it regardless. But with that being said, I will tell you what it's about. He is developing a heavy metal story, The 49th Key, as a TV miniseries. It is the first chapter of which debuted, or the first chapter of The 49th Key debuted in Heavy Metal number 273. So for you heavy metal fans out there and stuff, and I don't know that much about The 49th Key personally, but it was written by Eric Lewis, and the artwork is done by J.K. Woodard. This is the description of it for our fans if you've never heard of it. It is said that in the 16th century England, 48 keys were passed between worlds containing messages of community, compassion, and forgiveness. With the firm belief these messages have been spoken by angels praying for humanity to evolve into something more benevolent and just. Lifetimes later, there are still rumors of a final message foretold to open the gates of wisdom and understanding, the 49th key. In the present day, with a new administration and an expensive private school threatens to send away a lost orphan boy believed to be autistic and mute, his doctor turns to the only person she can find with a connection to the boy, and this leads the three of them on a dangerous journey through England to bring him home. Along the way, they discover that the boy is the 49th key, the very key to open the doorway between our world and Nokia. So that's the description. And again, let's face it, we're all going to watch it because John Barrowman's doing it, aren't we?
Well, you had me at heavy metal.
David, I don't care about Captain Jack. It's the heavy metal. And that's why he's our comic book guy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and what is there to need to know more about heavy metal than sci-fi and titties?
There you go. So, anyway, before we move along to reviews and stuff, was there any comic book news that you wanted to talk about, David?
As far as news, the only thing really exciting to come down the quote news pike is that Supergirl has officially gone into production as of yesterday. They were filming the first scene. Don't know much details other than that. I will go ahead and freely pimp out some awesome new books that I've personally been reading. I'm really excited with what's going on with a little production or a little press you might have heard of called Action Lab. They've got a book out called Midnight Tiger, which is pretty dang awesome. Still not quite sure what the main character is all about other than he has cat-like powers and he operates around midnight. And then there's one book that I just bought the second issue, haven't had a chance to read it. I love the first one. It's called Stray. What it is a, it's a kind of vigilante, it's a dog themed vigilante. And, it starts off where, the first issue begins with a character called, the Doberman, and he trains up his son to be his sidekick called the Rottweiler. And, so as the, story moves along, the son goes wayward and does his own thing, and then the Doberman gets killed, so suddenly he's called back into action, and that's where the story picks up.
Nice. Well,
yeah.
Fans will have to check that out. And speaking of Supergirl, one big news item casting-wise that I forgot to mention, and I'm glad you brought that up, David, just to add to our nostalgia, Helen Slater, who was the original Supergirl in the 80s movie, was cast in the show, and Dean Cain, who played Superman in the Lois and Clark adventures. So,
of course.
Yeah.
Because Dean Cain needs something to do.
he's made some pretty good B movies over the years, but yeah, I mean, he didn't make a bad Superman at all, despite how hokey and campy the Lois and Clark adventures really were. But so just like the Flash,
you know
where you get
I think he just deserved the job for telling Michael Moore to telling Michael Moore he was going to punch him in the mouth over American Sniper. So, you know, I'm all about Dean Cain for that. To me, that was fantastic.
Yeah, you know
Michael
what?
Moore, I love communism. I own 7 houses. Whatever. Mm.
Yeah.
So,
you know, this is why I like talking on that nerd show. Because when we have controversies like which is the best Batman, and you know, and no, we're not going to make David cringe talking about how wonderful the Christopher Nolan movies were. But yeah, I know. Here we go. But we actually have fun debates. I don't understand why we're having this debate over American Sniper. Okay, it's a movie. This guy had incredible training. Okay, he was a badass as a soldier and a sniper. Enough said. There is no debate that we should be having, okay? And Clint Eastwood hasn't really made a terrible, terrible movie. They're all great dramas. I'd like to think on this show, when we talk about things, we talk about important things, not a bunch of bullshit just to fill up our airtime. And that's all I'm saying.
I know. I was just, as a veteran, I was very happy with Dean Cain's reaction. Dean Cain gets 2 thumbs up from me.
Well,
even if I already didn't like it because of the fact that I was a big fan of Lois and Clark as a kid.
Right. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I like that show because I actually got to make out with a girl while watching a Superman show as a teenager. So, I mean, win-win.
Hey.
Thank you, Dean Cain.
Right.
All right.
And,
so.
Two real quick sliders I want to put in there. Another couple series I'm enjoying is there's a Dead at 17 miniseries that's on number 5. It's set to end at issue 7. And The Goners, which is based around a group of a family of hunters and cryptozoology. It's called The Goners, and it's currently on issue 5. I highly recommend picking up all those books I mentioned.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. I will have to definitely check those out. Okay, so we are actually going to do a review of Star Wars Rebels, since this is a Star Wars show, but we'll get to that in a minute. I mean, we have to talk about it since season 1 is done.
Oh, my God. It was so good.
Don't tell them yet what our rating is going to be, even though they already know. But anyway, one of the screenings that we did this week, if you're looking for buddy movies, funny movies and stuff like that, kind of a cross between the buddy guy type of movie with, you know, Office Space because it's work related. We did, I saw Unfinished Business last night at the theaters with Vince Vaughn. If you don't like Vince Vaughn and you've never really liked him in anything he's done, you're not going to like this movie. I mean, that's just, because he's Vince Vaughn. He plays what he's been playing the last 10 years outside of one or two, you know, kind of adult roles and stuff like that. But if you do like his movies and like a good little fun comedy, then Unfinished Business is actually really good. It's one of the better ones that he's done in the last 10 years. I wouldn't say it's never going to be as good as Old School or Dodgeball. I think those two are the standard when it comes to him. But, I think, you know, you're not dealing with some ridiculous romantic comedy like he did with Jennifer Aniston. I don't even remember the name of it because it was terrible.
You're not all about the Wedding Crashers?
That's true, too. I like the Wedding Crashers, but I also find Owen Wilson annoying. He's my least favorite Wilson brother. So anytime he pairs with Owen Wilson in the movie, it just kind of like, so,
it's possible to have a favorite
Owen Wilson
brother.
Owen Wilson's good in small doses.
Yeah. I can like the Wedding Crashers, but, you know, I'm not going to go crazy over it. Like everybody else. But for a Vince Vaughn movie, Unfinished Business was really funny. I would actually give it a 7 out of 10. It is, excuse me, it is, it's okay. It really is. There's a lot of really funny moments in it. Tom Court, forgot his name, and I apologize. You know, what's his face from the Full Monty, the older guy. He was actually pretty funny in it. James Franco's little brother. It had Nick Frost in it, and Nick Frost is always great in any movie that he's in. You know, it's one of those that I don't know if I would pay $15 for an evening movie to go see, but I would definitely see it as a matinee, spend a few bucks, or I would rent it on demand or something like that. So it's enjoyable to watch a few times if you need a good laugh, or if you're in a job where you have to travel and you're competing with bigger companies trying to, you know, make a deal and all that, and the kind of the clash between cultures because they have to, you know, go to Germany not to try to make this deal. But, you know, like I said, it's definitely okay. It's one of the better ones that he has done. And I think part of it is it's not him getting together with all of his pals all the time. Okay. And I do think the lesser of those movies are the ones where he does team with Owen Wilson. Just like Brendan said, Owen Wilson's good in small doses. You know what Owen Wilson's best movie was, to be quite honest? Armageddon. Because he was funny in small doses and not annoying.
Just goes to prove your point. I don't even remember him in that movie.
So actually, you don't have to remember him.
Actually, honestly, the best movie I've ever seen him in, he wasn't even trying to be funny. It was Behind Enemy Lines when he played the Rio on an F-18 Hornet that got shot down in Bosnia.
Yeah.
With Gene
yeah.
Hackman.
Actually, that's true.
You know, other than that, I would have to say it was The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
That's true, too.
Bill Murray.
Okay, maybe
Bill
I missed
Murray
the
can
point.
Make anybody
Life
better.
Aquatic was so painfully unfunny.
Oh,
I love
that
movie.
Loved it.
The Life Aquatic trying too hard.
Bill Murray. No, that's the beauty of Bill Murray. He doesn't try at all.
Yeah, it was everyone else around him.
Right. But anyway.
I don't watch it for everybody else all around him. I watch it for him. Well, Angelica Houston was pretty good.
No, that's true. Okay, so Star Wars Rebels Season 1. It was fucking awesome. That's right. You get it's fucking awesome. That's how good it was. Okay? I'm not going to give it a perfect 10 because there were some episodes that were kind of like slow and drawn out. Kind of in the middle,
right. But
I will definitely give it 9 out of 10 as in the way they ended it, holy shit. Shit just got real.
I'm going to give it as a season, as a whole season, I'm going to give it a 7.5, which is very good, but there's a lot of room for improvement. Those last three episodes were like 9, 9.5, 10, holy shit.
Right.
So, you know, those last three episodes made up for a lot of some of the cringeworthy stuff. And, you know, I'm going to point out, let's get really into it, the last three episodes, because that's where it went off the wall. Basically,
right.
As soon as they brought Grand Moff Tarkin in, that's when it just went off the chain. Because the first thing that happens when Tarkin shows up is the Inquisitor, spoilers, you don't want to listen, turn off for the next 5 minutes. Anyway, the Inquisitor chops off the head of two Imperial officers. Now, they don't show it. It's just implied. But that's still really dark for Disney XD, and I was really proud of Dave Filoni and his team for doing that. For those of you who don't know, Dave Filoni is the showrunner of Star Wars Rebels. He also ran Star Wars The Clone Wars. And then they finally capture, and, you know, a lot of people were talking about how what the show really needed was the Empire to get a win, because the Rebels had just been winning too much, and the Empire is this big bad thing. So you need the bad guy to, you know, hey, strike back. So they brought Tarkin in, and they capture Freddie Prinze Jr. character, the Jedi Kanan, and torture the crap out of him and were really sinister about it. And so now you actually get this idea of, okay, the Empire is really a threat. These guys are actually risking something.
Right.
And then the last episode where they go and rescue Kanan, and Kanan sees what he thinks is, he sees his Padawan be killed, and now he's got two lightsabers, and he's fighting the Inquisitor, and the Inquisitor, his whole thing is based on fear, and once he's lost that ability to scare you, you realize the Inquisitor is not a full-blown Sith. The Inquisitor is just a force-trained assassin. He's not even a full apprentice of Vader. And once Kanan realized that and got over his own fear, in the line where he said, there is something greater than fear, the Force, let me show you how strong it is. And right there, the Inquisitor knew he was beat.
Right.
And that was such a beautiful line, the best line in that season finale. And then, of course, you know, we see the aftermath of that, and it was very reminiscent of the beginning of Return of the Jedi, and I will let Marcus explain why, because I know he's dying to.
It's very reminiscent. Oh, the end of Return of the Jedi?
The beginning of Return of the Jedi, when the Emperor comes off the... Oh, okay. So, at the, all right. Let me... I'm sorry.
Right, you talk about when Vader walks off...
Yes.
You're talking about when Vader comes off the shuttle.
Right, because it's very reminiscent of when the Empire comes off the shuttle on the Death Star.
Right.
You know, at the beginning of Return of the Jedi. So, yeah. So, basically, Tarkin was in Vader's place, and Vader was in the Emperor's place, essentially, from Return of the Jedi. And my favorite line I've seen in regards to the show is when they told Tarkin to evacuate his Star Destroyer. Somebody goes, evacuate? In my moment of triumph? Okay, but just for this one time, never again.
Now,
that was my favorite comment about that episode. But
I think my my favorite thing really about Rebels is, you know, we really don't know how the rebellion really started. You know, you get glimpses of it and hints of it from the expanded universe in the books and stuff like that, but you don't realize that there's this full rebellion really going on and has been for a few years with, you know, when Luke, you know, when the droids find Luke and his adventure starts.
Right.
And, you know, you never really talk about, you know, when you see the original trilogy, Obi-Wan makes it sound like that him and Yoda are the only two Jedis left, and now they're about to find their apprentice. But, you know, there was a lot of Jedis before Order 66, and they didn't get everybody, okay? So you have to assume
a lot of them
that
were
some
hiding.
Right, exactly, in what their stories are. I love the fact that Ahsoka is back, you know, and that she...
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that, yeah.
Yeah, she has been raging this kind of war with the Rebellion for a while by putting people on little missions and, you know, being fulcrum and stuff. It kind of ignored that. There's, and I apologize to the listeners there. If we go down, if we're not live for a little bit, you'll be able to get the rest of the show on demand afterwards. But we still do have another 30 minutes to go talking about rumors. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio, and all of its technical difficulties. But anyway,
you know what I'd really like to point out about what the Clone Wars does from a tone and a storytelling standpoint, and you brought it up, it's very reminiscent of the original trilogy, because in the original trilogy, they just throw you into the mix, the rebellion's already going on, and they just tell you a rebellion's going on, and that you have to just kind of catch up with the story. You know,
right.
They don't treat you like a child, they don't tell you all the minutiae, and I think one of the biggest problems from a storytelling standpoint in the prequels is they got stuck in that minutiae. I mean, nobody cares about trade disputes, okay? So the original trilogy did a very good job of sucking you into a story quickly, and Star Wars Rebels does the same thing. And one episode really kind of sticks in my mind from that type of storytelling perspective. It was the episode where Ezra infiltrates the Imperial Academy to become a stormtrooper. And in the episode, from last week, you had no idea that they were going to infiltrate the Imperial Academy. They don't give you any clues to this. And so the episode begins with Ezra taking off the stormtrooper, the trainee helmet. And you're like, holy crap, what's Ezra doing in the Imperial Academy? And you have to catch up and just pay attention to the story. And it draws you into the story quickly because it throws you off guard and you're trying to figure out what's going on. And it doesn't treat you like a mindless idiot. It expects you to be intelligent and be able to carry along with the story. And I love that because it just tonally reminds me of the original trilogy, and I think it's very well done.
Well, what I was kind of getting at, and I agree, I mean, the original trilogy is really Luke's story, okay? It's his story in helping save his father. And everybody else is just a side character, and this it's in the midst of a rebellion that leads to, you know, bringing down the Empire. But you don't get this whole backstory or know about other Jedis and stuff like that, that there were other apprentices that were discovered, you know. What I would find really interesting with Ezra is now that you are doing a new trilogy that is set 30 years after Return of the Jedi, well, what are their stories? What happens to Kanan 30 years down the road? Is he an old man, an old Jedi master? What happens to Ezra?
Didn't even survive.
What happens? Yeah. I want those stories told. But it's great to see how they kind of fit in and how they become part of it. Also, you know, how do they all connect to Luke and when his story is done after Return of the Jedi? You know, and Jedis are kind of come back. Because, again, you make it think like, well, Luke is the last Jedi. Everybody else is dead. Now he's got to go search out Padawans. Well, that isn't really the case. There were Jedis before him that are older than him that were masters. While he's kind of the hero, he's really relatively a new Jedi. Okay? He did his one big test to become a Jedi. And it's only kind of by default that he becomes a Jedi master. Okay, because he's really one of the last ones. So, but Star Wars Rebel as a whole for the first season, I mean, it definitely dives you into everything. You very much get the reminiscence of Episode 4 where the characters come together. And this is kind of my segue into talking about rumors about Star Wars. Because one of the biggest rumors is how all of these characters are coming together and how they're going to be reminiscent about the old Star Wars, from Star Wars Rebels into what we are hearing about Episode 7 and the beginnings of everything. But you have to start this adventure about how all your characters really come together. How do they meet and what they're going to get thrown into and what their adventures are together? Okay, one of the things I really love about Rebels is it's a cross between Jedi, Star Wars, but it also very much has a Firefly Serenity feeling too, where you have all these outcasts on one little ship, who are heroes in their own right.
Kanan is Mal. Hera is a cross between Wash and Zoe. Zek is definitely Jane, So you've got you got all your big characters there. There's definitely those archetypes in there. Absolutely.
Well, and then
what is that? Just big damn hero, sir. Just.
Well, if Star Wars proves anything, it's storytelling formula. Okay, it's how you introduce your characters and how they come together. Okay. To become heroes and go off and fight, the bigger war and stuff. And so I will start it off with Star Wars rumors talking about how Episode 7 is going to start. One of the major things is which we've mentioned this before, and I swear to God, I hope this is not even true. J.J. Abrams actually already dropped news that some of the rumors were actually true, which they were bound to
be. Yes, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, but I apologize to the audience there, still getting over a cold. If this movie literally starts out with Luke's floating hand holding a lightsaber, I'm walking out. I'm done, okay? Because that is just cheap, lazy writing right there. Now, I do believe that part of the story, that what is true, is that they are finding, whether it's Luke's old lightsaber or a lightsaber, and that it's an important artifact. And part of the story is you've got to take it back to Luke, wherever he's hiding, okay? But the whole floating hand crap, oh, my God, that better be a rumor.
Yeah, that's
just saying.
That's just
awful.
No. That's Family Guy. That's Family Guy made territory.
No.
Right.
No.
So, making StarWars.net, basically a blog that pieces together rumors and reports from people, and of course, you know, things are going to leak out. But this is what has been thrown out there as, again, I want to preface this. This is rumors. This is what we're hearing. Okay, so it's kind of trying to figure out, you know, whether it's true. So apparently, you have a character named Naka who finds a lightsaber and accidentally ignites it, and, you know, runs off and gives it to the vicar, which the vicar is, or the holy man leader or whatever of the village, and who is played by Max von Sydow. And he's the one that contacts the rebels, and that's what gets Oscar Isaac's character onto Tatooine, who is the X-Wing pilot. Character's name is Poe Dameron. Dameron? I don't even know how to pronounce the last name.
Dameron.
Poe
Dameron.
That's the first,
like,
yeah,
Cameron with a C.
Okay. And then that.
Well, why don't we just call him Cameron Poe and get it over with?
Because we're not.
Oh, well. Anyway, then that's where you start, where you get Finn, who is John, and I can't pronounce his last name, who's the stormtrooper, the black stormtrooper, and then apparently doesn't want to be.
Boyega.
And these two end up getting captured when rebel forces follow the rebels there in search of this weapon. And I guess the leader is going to be Kylo Ren, the Inquisitor, played by Adam Driver or whatever. And then it just sort of takes off from there, that they, you know, end up into a brig on a starship and then escape and then end up back on Tatooine. And that's where Daisy Ridley's character comes into as Rey. And then they're all off to the races on their adventure together with this weapon, and end up meeting Han Solo on a larger ship and stealing the Falcon and all that. That's what's being thrown out there right now, is how these characters are coming back, or coming, you know, to meet each other. The reason I started off that way is, in continuing my point about how you bring your characters together, I think there probably is some truth to that story a little bit. Maybe not all the details are correct, but you've got to bring it into some situation there of how these characters really meet and what's the driving force on them going off to their adventure together, which is very reminiscent of Episode 4, Luke, Han, and Obi-Wan and Chewie and going to rescue the princess. So, you know, there's a sense of it's great to have that nostalgia, but at the same time, you know, how original are you if all you're doing is trying to capture the same kind of story but with different characters, you know, for a new trilogy?
Yeah.
What this
anyway.
Sounds like is a bad role-playing game session. It's like I'm the GM, and I'm going to – this is how all the PCs are going to go, and we're going to cameo all the main characters – just to say they were in there and add flavor to the game and make everybody at the table pop.
Oh, it could be. I mean,
all right,
I like
now everyone drop initiative.
I mean, I agree. You have to have something that brings these characters together. Okay, and they have already said that. You know, Luke is a little crazy. He's kind of in hiding. He's a hermit. That's why his beard's all scraggly and stuff like that. And it's about the search for Luke and what's going on with him. Okay?
Well, on that note, if he doesn't
do
the Joker laugh, I'm going to be disappointed.
That's where you draw the line on the movie?
Yes.
Actually, if he does do the Joker laugh, I'm going to be disappointed because those are two distinctly different characters and they should never coexist.
But if he's crazy, it only makes sense.
That's true.
It doesn't because he's not the Joker. Not in this.
When nostalgia
collides.
We're
not doing DC Star Wars crossovers because, let's face it, DC's owned by Warner Brothers. Star Wars and Marvel are done by Disney, so you don't have a chance at this happening.
So in talking about these opening sequences and stuff like that, how much do you actually think is probably true and not true, Brendan?
I don't think any of it's true.
Really? You're going for none at all?
Yeah, because I think they learned a lesson from Blue Harvest. Blue Harvest was of course, everybody knows Family Guy Blue Harvest, but Blue Harvest was the actual code name for Star Wars Return of the Jedi. Okay, so people, and that was them in 1983 throwing off media and rabid fans who wanted to know about it. That was before there was an internet the way the internet is today. Yes, you could get online, and there was DARPANET, and there was modems. Yes, you could do these things, but not like today. I think all of this crap is misinformation. The reason why I say that is because Luke Skywalker has already, Mark Hamill, who plays Luke, has already come out and said, look, I'm not going to tell you guys anything because December is not that far away, and I want you guys to experience the movie like you experienced the first time you saw Star Wars, because half of your disappointment in the prequels was you already knew half of what was going on going in. Now, the other half is they were just poorly written, but he didn't get into that, obviously. He didn't want to piss off his friend George. But, I think they are just putting out a ton of misinformation. Maybe small bits of it are true, but I think the broad strokes are all BS. I think they're just leading us down a different path because, first of all, I really don't think Lawrence Kasdan could write a script that bad, because there are some bad, bad rumors out there and that sound like really bad fan fiction. And if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And it ain't probably a Star Wars script. So
right.
There's a lot of things out there to believe me. There might be some small bits, but the broad strokes, I don't think Luke's going to be absolutely crazy because, I'm sorry, you sit yourself down to write the definitive Star Wars trilogy of the last three decades. Notice the original trilogy was before three decades. Anyway, but the definitive Star Wars trilogy for this generation, okay? You have to do better than the prequels. They know this. They have to at least come close to the originals. You've got people that have been waiting to see Luke Skywalker and Han Solo and Princess Leia on screen again for 40 years. So, what are we going to do? I know. Let's wait. Let's make them wait for 2 hours to see Luke, and then when we put him on screen, he's batshit crazy.
Well, see, that's
about
the rumor that
for
does.
A second.
Well, it is definitely a wouldn't have seen coming.
Well, I know, but that kind of bothers me a little bit. I mean, maybe this is the fanboy in me about, talking about misinformation and what you want. I'm not saying that. We already know that this new trilogy is about introducing the next generation of heroes, that the original cast is really just kind of a guide into the new trilogy, okay? But to sit there and to say that Luke is only really going to have one or two scenes in the entire movie, and the big scene really isn't until the end. I don't buy that. I'm not saying you're going to be in there as much as these new characters, but that seems kind of shitty to me. I mean, especially if you care about the fans, to write this story. Well.
Right.
We'll have a little flashback scene with an actor that's being introduced as a younger Luke right after Return of the Jedi, and then we're going to have him, show up later with one little minor scene and then blah, blah, blah. That just seems wrong in so many ways.
Now, if they want to do something where Luke is missing, I would much rather see this. The opening crawl comes up, and you know, it's been 30 years since the fall of the Emperor. The galaxy is still in turmoil because, you know, a strong government has not come up to take in its place. The Imperial remnants of the Empire are still around. The Rebel Alliance is still holding off Star Destroyer